God bless you, and welcome to Spirit and Truth Fellowship International's audio podcast. Our goal is to provide you with Bible-based teachings that will help you walk in a transforming relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. We hope you will be inspired by what you're about to hear.
Provider, protector, prophet, and priest. Four responsibilities of all leadership. It so happened about 3 or 4 years ago, I was talking to a friend of mine, John Truett, lives down in Kentucky. And during the course of the conversation, I asked John what was happening in their church. What were they up to? John told me that he was pretty excited that the men of his church had gotten together, specifically to work the topic of their role as the head of their families, their role as husbands and fathers, and what they had seen was that they are to be providers, protectors, and also prophet and priests to their families. I had never heard it put so succinctly before, and when I got off the phone, I kind of sat back in my chair and I thought about it, reflecting back over the decades of my life as I've raised a number of my children, and specifically, how had I lived up to these four responsibilities? What kind of provider had I been? How good of a protector was I? What were the various areas of protection that I should have really been doing? And then also, of course, how had I lived up to my duties as a prophet and a priest to my family? I believe, as I said, that these are four major responsibilities that every leader has. Now, I began on this trek specifically looking at it in the context of family leadership. But the more that I studied it, I realized this isn't just about family. This is about every leader. In many ways, a leader can be thought of merely as the head of a household. Well, if I'm leading my business, that's the household that I'm a head of. This is not about male or female. The fact is that we have many single moms that are the head of their household. I still believe that these four responsibilities are given to you to be a provider, a protector, a prophet, and a priest. I also believe that if there's a husband and wife team that's together raising their family, that they jointly share this responsibility, that the husband specifically has to live up to his role as a provider, a protector, a prophet, and a priest in a very specific way that relates to him as the man in that household. But the mother does too. She also needs to be a provider, a protector, a prophet, and a priest. This also relates to, let's just say you're in a situation at work and you're a supervisor. In many ways, you still need to provide, protect, and be a prophet and a priest to those that are in your charge. Let's never forget that people are God's most valuable possession. And therefore, as leaders, we have been given a charge by God, to make sure that we properly care for those people. These four responsibilities give us a context that will help us to frame how we discharge the responsibility of care. God set it up so that the most basic society unit is the family. So certainly it should come as no surprise that the family is under attack, and specifically the leadership of that family. If Satan can weaken the leadership, if he can erode it or undermine it, then he has gone a long way in achieving his goal of attacking God, specifically by destroying the family. Most of us are aware that fatherhood is mocked and spoofed. There's a rise in fatherless families. We see spousal abuse, child abuse, neglect of family. As a father of four daughters, I became painfully aware of these four responsibilities when I look back on my children, and I have tried to articulate how they should choose a mate, but didn't necessarily have this understanding as succinctly as I'm trying to put it forth today. When each of my daughters has come to me over the course of time, whether it be with a boyfriend or eventually maybe their spouse, a lot of times what drew them to the person was their personality. They were intrigued by another young man because he made them feel so good or made them feel so important. Sadly, there actually was a shift in society that happened back around the 1920s, where the emphasis moved off of character and onto personality. In fact, a gentleman by the name of Warren Sussman, who I believe was either a social psychologist or one of those types of sociologists, studied this and documented what he called a culture of character versus a culture of personality. Today, we live in a society where personality reigns. We emphasize the extrovert. We promote the charismatic, the flamboyant. That's why people look, especially our young people, look at choosing a mate based on the person's personality and not necessarily so much on character. Why did this shift occur? Well, they've documented it happened right around the 1920s. And the cause of it, in many ways, had to do with the rise of cinema. You remember we had the Roaring Twenties and all of that? Well, prior to that time, what was really promoted was what type of a provider was the mate going to be. Is this the kind of person that would protect me, my family, my children? You know, how is this person in regard to their faith? Are they godly? Do they have a strong faith? Now, oftentimes, and I'm not saying this to condemn anything, but oftentimes now, those aren't even factors that come to the table when it comes to a young person choosing a mate. I know from personal experience, because I've raised four daughters, all of which are in their early 30s, and I've been through this. I've seen it. And it's been very frustrating because there's been times, and now let me step back for a second. I've got some wonderful son-in-laws, you know, but there's also been times where they've dated young men where I'm pulling my hair out of my head and I'm saying, what are you thinking? When it comes to a family situation, what really needs to be asked is, as I said, what kind of provider is this person going to be? Will they protect me and protect my children? Is this person spiritually right? These have tremendously significant answers to these questions. I have a situation that I've related publicly, where I have my one daughter, Sheila, died a while back. But when Sheila chose a mate, she chose a young man, wonderful guy, but he wasn't Christian. He had no faith. When I questioned Sheila about this and told her that I was really disturbed about it, she said, well, Dad, we've come to an agreement. When it comes to the spiritual regarding the children, I'm going to raise them, and my husband has deferred that to me. Well, that sounded good at the time. But as many of you know, Sheila died. That left two grandchildren, a 5-year-old and an 18-month-old, in the hands of someone who had no spiritual basis, who could not provide a role as a prophet and a priest to those children. I know my daughter's heart would be broken if she knew this. And Lori and I pray every day for those grandkids because we know that this could have been prevented. And the problem is when you're going into a situation like this, most people, you can't predict this. So when it comes to choosing a mate, when it comes to being a leader, when it comes to the rulership over a family, when it comes to rulers in the church or leaders, I use that word ruler loosely, the head of the church, someone who has given a leadership responsibility, when it comes to business owners, these four roles are the major responsibilities that every person in any one of those positions has. We have the role of being a provider, a protector, a prophet, and a priest. So now in this teaching, I want to go in specifically. In the next four parts, we're going to break down each one of these responsibilities. In this next part, I want to talk specifically about the role or responsibility of a provider. In this role, we emphasize the caring for the needs of those in your charge. Now, I'm going to relate to many of these things as the head of my household, as a father. But as I mentioned earlier, I want you to think in terms of your leadership. What are you responsible for? Now, maybe it's just you're responsible for yourself if you're a single person. Then you can still use this teaching in looking at these four areas of your life and how are you discharging them. Or if you happen to be someone who is under leadership, you can also serve that leadership if they're not properly providing these roles. And as I mentioned earlier, if you happen to be someone who's potentially looking for a mate or someone that you want to spend your life with, then this is a very good filter, these four filters to run that person through and just to look at how are they going to live up to these responsibilities. Because these are responsibilities that I believe God has given to us. They're not something that we can sidestep. So in the role of the provider, as I said, the emphasis is on caring for the needs of those in your charge. Let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8. In 1 Timothy 5:8 it says, "If anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." Now that, to me, is pretty strong language. If you do not provide, and the word here provide in the Greek is pronoeo, and what it means is it can be broken down in a couple different ways, but basically it's like to take thought for the future needs, to foresee, to think beforehand. You know, if you're not thinking ahead of time for the thing that you're responsible to care for, what are going to be its needs, then the Word of God says that you're worse than an unbeliever. I mean, wow. And it says specifically, if anyone, it doesn't say if the father or the mother, if anyone does not provide for his relatives. Again, we're not talking specifically where it says for his children, for his relatives, and especially for his immediate family, he's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. I believe 1 Timothy 5:8 is speaking specifically to our role as a provider. Now, what are the specific things that we as providers need to take care of? Well, clearly, first there's the physical. I know many men who work a hard day, and then they walk in at the end of the day, they grumble, bark at the dog, and then park themselves in front of the television, and they say, "Well, I'm providing a paycheck, you ought to be happy." Guys, I'm telling you, that's not good enough. That's not gonna stand at the muster before Jesus. That is not living up to your role as a provider. As the head of a household, we have a moral obligation to provide for the family. That's right, a moral obligation. Specifically, it's highlighted in Exodus 21:10 and 11. And when I say we have an obligation to provide, we have an obligation to provide for the physical needs, the emotional needs, and the spiritual needs of our family. In Exodus 21:10 through 11, it says, "If he marries another woman, he must not deprive the first one of her food, clothing, and marital rights." The marital rights include the sexual needs of your mate. And in verse 11, it goes on, it says, "If he does not provide her with these three things, she is to go free without any payment of money." In other words, if a man, and now we're talking Old Testament where they could take more than one wife, but if a man chose another wife, and in the course of that decision, it deprived the first one of food, clothing, and marital rights, then she was free to go. In other words, God was saying, by way of Moses here, that she was free to divorce the man. Now, what is an application that we can use from that? Because clearly the New Testament tells us that every man is to have his own wife, and every woman, her own husband. So in the New Testament, we know that one man, one wife, one husband. But the application, or what we can see demonstrated here as God's heart, is that the father, the husband in this case, is to provide food, clothing, and marital rights. In other words, he's to provide for her physical needs. Now, in the Old Testament, it could be limited to food, clothing, and marital rights, because honestly, they had a nomadic lifestyle. They lived in tents. You know, if you have herds, you have food. You know, most people had one, maybe two sets of clothing. And the other major physical need was their sexual needs. And what God is saying is, if you don't provide for the physical needs of this wife, she's free to go. I have seen many situations where a woman has come to me and said, you know, this guy is just not providing. He's not working. He's a lazy bum. He's gone years on end, and the family's neglected. You know, my understanding of it is that according to Exodus 21:10, that man is not living up to his godly responsibility to provide for the physical needs of that family. The other thing I mentioned is the mental and emotional needs of your family. Ephesians 5:25 and 28. Now again, I'm saying family here, but if you're a business owner, you have an obligation to properly care for the mental and emotional needs of your employees. Specifically, for husbands, in Ephesians 5:25 and 28, it says, "Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her by washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain, wrinkle, or other blemish, but holy and blameless. In this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies." So how exactly do you love yourself? Well, the problem is most of us are very much in love with ourselves. That's generally not the problem. So the standard on how we are to love those that are placed in our care is just as Christ does the church. Specifically in this marriage situation, husbands are to love their wives as their own body. But I believe that this is giving us the understanding that as a head of a responsibility, as a leader, we are to provide for the mental and emotional needs of those that are given in our charge. A friend of mine mentioned to me a long time ago, he said, "Men must be steel and velvet, steel in our spines, but soft to the touch." You know, when we say steel in our spines, as leaders, we need to not fold. We need to be able to endure, to stand up, to bear up under the pressure, to persevere, to bend but not to break. But yet at the same time, we need to be velvet, soft to the touch, tender-hearted, compassionate, abounding in love. A proper leader is one who cares for the physical, mental, and emotional needs of those that are in their charge. That's why in Ephesians 6:4, it says, "Fathers, don't exasperate your children." You know, specifically talking about the leadership role of a father here. You know, many fathers may provide for their children, but then they tease them mercilessly. They put them in positions where they just exasperate the children. In contrast to that, it says, instead, bringing them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. And in Colossians 3:21, it says, "Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged." Again, the father, as a leader of that family, has a responsibility to provide for the mental and emotional needs of that family. And last, the other thing as a provider that we need to make sure that we are doing is we need to provide for the spiritual needs of our family. In the context of providing for your spiritual needs of your family, I see this can show up in a number of ways. First, I believe the major responsibility is to teach your family the two great commandments: to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and then also to love your neighbor as yourself. We also have a spiritual responsibility to get our family born again. If you're married to a mate who has not accepted Christ, then you are to continue to pray for that person and to provide for their spiritual needs by being an example and helping to point them to Jesus Christ. Also, to bring your children to the point where they know who Christ is and to accept him as their Lord and Savior. And then once having done that, to lead them to spiritual maturity. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 8 through 10 is a great section in here where it says in verse 9, "Only be careful and watch yourselves closely so that you do not forget the things your eyes have seen or let them slip from your heart as long as you live. Teach them to your children and to their children after them." In other words, provide for the spiritual needs of your children and grandchildren by teaching them. Verse 10, "Remember the day you stood before the Lord your God at Horeb, when he said to me, 'Assemble the people before me to hear my words, so that they may learn to revere me as long as they live in the land and may teach them to their children.'" Again, emphasis on providing for the spiritual needs of your family by teaching your children. The same is spoken of in Deuteronomy 18 through 21. It again emphasizes teaching children. Recently, Lori and I had to make a decision, and it was specifically prompted by our responsibility to provide for our family. As I've mentioned in numerous times, many of you know that we are raising three young grandchildren. And over the course of the last year, specifically much more in the course of the last 6 months, it became very apparent to us that we needed to make a shift. We needed more help. We needed to get that help, and to do that, it was going to most likely require us to make a move. Lori's mom and sister also have had some family situations that have developed, and being 2,500 miles away from them, since we live in Indiana and they live out on the West Coast, we've been very much unable to provide for those needs. So as we prayed and prayed, we felt really that our family needed to move. We needed to make a change where we could be closer to my extended family and to Lori's family so that we could properly provide for these kids and provide for our own personal needs. We approached the board of directors and mentioned to them that most likely we needed to make a move, and we were asking for their prayer and could they help us in this, and that we really felt that we needed to move back to the West Coast. Well, I thank God for the men and women that I work with in this ministry, and after they prayed for a couple weeks, they came back and they said, "What kind of ministry would we be if we stood in the way of you providing for the needs for your family?" And they granted me permission to move to the West Coast and still to continue my job and be employed with Spirit and Truth, but to discharge my duties from a remote location. See, we're the kind of ministry that puts family first, because after all, family is a person's first ministry. And that specifically is related to our responsibility to provide for our family. As a provider, you need to be able to provide for the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual needs of those that are in your care. In part two, we're going to look at the role of the protector. And in this part, the protector, the emphasis is placed on protecting those in your charge from harm or injury, not just physical, but also emotional and spiritual injury. When we look at the aspect of physical protection, as men, most men generally can relate to the idea that they're physically stronger than females. We're hardwired for more physicality. So there is a certain aspect of physical protection that should come with a leadership role. But women too, you also have a responsibility to provide this same protection. I think of sometimes I see my wife Lori and it's like, uh-oh, mama bear's come out. You know, when she perceives that those under her care are going to be harmed, it's just like we say, that mama bear, never separate, you know, the mama bear from her cubs. So leaders as protectors are to be the first sufferer. What I mean by that is we take the first blow. We step forward and we protect those in our charge. You know, obviously, if there was a burglar at the door, you don't send your wives or your children to deal with it. When I was growing up, my dad taught me it was my responsibility to defend my sisters. In fact, my younger sister, Teresa, tells the story how years later she went to her 20 or 30 year anniversary at high school and how so many guys came up to her and said, you know, I really wanted to date you, but I was so afraid of your brother because he made it clear, don't mess with my sisters. You know, that's our responsibility. As a leader, we have a responsibility to provide for the physical protection of those in our care. Let's go to Genesis chapter 14, verse 12, and you'll see this clearly play out. In Genesis 14, 12, it says, they also carried off Abraham's nephew Lot and his possessions, since he was living in Sodom. One who had escaped came and reported this to Abram, the Hebrew. Now, Abram was living near the great trees of Mamre, the Amorite, a brother of Eshcol and Aner, all of whom were allied with Abram. When Abram heard that his relative had been taken captive, he called out the 318 trained men born in his household and went in pursuit as far as Dan. During the night, Abram divided his men to attack them, and he routed them, pursuing them as far as Hobah, north of Damascus. Verse 16, he recovered all the goods and brought back his relative Lot and his possessions together with the women and all the other people. Abraham, as head of his household, as patriarch, he is providing the protection that he's responsible for. This is also another example of this is found in Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 13. It says, therefore, I, Nehemiah, stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by families with their swords, spears, and bows. After I looked things over, I stood up and said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, and your daughters, your wives, and your homes. Leaders, especially those given family leadership, are responsible for the protection of those underneath their care. And as a leader here, even within the office of Spirit and Truth, you know, I make sure that my employees are protected, you know, both physically, mentally, and spiritually. But providing for the physical protection of those in your care is not enough. We as leaders, as heads of our family, as those that are responsible for God's people, must also be an emotional shield to those in our care. The example that I'd like to look at is the example of Jacob and Leah. What we call the baby wars, that where Jacob goes back and forth, and how Leah felt so unloved, but yet she just so desired her husband's love. In Genesis chapter 30, verse 19, it says, Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. Then Leah said, God has presented me with a precious gift. This time my husband will treat me with honor because I have borne him six sons. So she named him Zebulun. This time my husband will treat me with honor. Oh my gosh. I mean, here this poor woman is just so desirous of Jacob to honor her and to love her. Jacob was wrong in the way that he treated her emotionally. He was not an emotional shield to her, and she was his wife. In Proverbs chapter 30, verse 21 and 23, it says, under three things the earth trembles, under four it cannot bear up. A servant who becomes a king, a fool who is full of food, verse 23, an unloved woman who is married, and a maidservant who displaces her mistress. An unloved woman who is married. Boy, you know, God says the earth trembles on it under that and can't bear up. That's because an unloved woman is a woman who is not being properly provided for emotionally. And as her husband, as the head of that household, he has a duty, a responsibility to be before God to protect her emotionally, to be an emotional shield. We also have a responsibility to be spiritual guardians, spiritual protectors of our families. I don't believe Adam properly lived up to this role. He didn't protect his wife. He should have instructed her. He should have told Eve, you know, that, you know, what God had had instructed him concerning the tree. But what does Adam do? It says that he stood by and watched, basically. Let's go to Genesis 3. And in Genesis 3:6, it says, "When the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye, and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. She also gave some to her husband, who was with her, and he ate it." What the heck? She's sitting there looking at this tree, seeing it's good for food and pleasing to the eye and desirable for gaining wisdom, and she takes it and eats it, and he was with her, and then he eats it? He's not providing for her spiritually. You know, the spiritual responsibility he had was to do what God told him to do, and also to teach his wife the same. The result being, then the eyes of both of them were opened. They realized they were naked, so they sewed fig leaves together and made coverings for themselves. Adam did not provide for the spiritual guardianship of his wife. We're to protect our families with truth. We're to protect our families by instructing them about God. We're to protect our families physically by making sure that they're not harmed. Recently, my grandson had an episode at school where he was being bullied. You know, both Lori and I went down and talked to the principal. At one point, I had to go down to the school because some kids even picked him up and put him in a trash can. Now, granted, my grandson wasn't, you know, innocent in this deal himself. He happened to have a mouth on him, and he happened to lash out. But one of the things I had to meet with the teacher and the principal about was, I've instructed my grandson that he has a right to defend himself, that if someone is picking on him, he's never to hit first, but he's never to allow another person just to beat him up. You know, we need to, as leaders, to be able to protect our family, and that means both physical, emotional, and spiritual. The last two major responsibilities of leadership speak to the godly aspects that leadership is supposed to provide. The first one is the role of a prophet. In this responsibility, it's speaking on behalf of God. In other words, the prophet role is representing God's heart to those in your care. Now, I'm not using the term prophet in the strict sense of one who speaks for God by revelation or discharges a prophetic ministry. No, not at all. What I'm talking about here is a prophet is one who speaks for God. So when I say that a leader has a responsibility that is to be a prophet, meaning merely that the leader has a responsibility to represent God's heart to those in his care. So, in other words, if you're going to represent God's heart, you have to know God's heart. And the only way to really know God's heart is to know God's word. So it goes without saying, to discharge this responsibility, a leader must be grounded in the scriptures. That doesn't mean you have to be a walking biblical encyclopedia, but you've got to know God's heart. You've got to know his word so that you, if you're a father, you can instruct your children, so that you can call them and bring them back to the foundation of God's word. If you're responsible in business, so that you are running your business properly and representing God's heart in all of your dealings with ethics and honesty, that you're treating employees properly and fairly. Having this responsibility as a prophet mean you need to exercise discernment, spiritual discernment, and you go to God seeking his advice, his guidance. One of the ways that this has shown up in my family as discharging this and representing God's heart is to be able to help the children identify what their personal ministries are. I've seen just at young ages how someone is already inclined to be an encourager. Or another one of the children has the tendency, I've seen the makings of a praise and worship ministry, or the beginnings of a serving ministry. I've also seen some very young children that are very prophetic. As a leader, as the head of my household, discharging this prophet role, I'm always seeking to represent God's heart to my family and to help them so that they can grow up and be spiritually mature. It also means that there's going to be some times when I need to correct or confront. You know, it's a commitment to discipline. In Hebrews chapter 12, verse 9, it says, "Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in His holiness." See, fathers have a responsibility to discipline, to bring His children up in the ways of God. Proverbs 23:13 says, "Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with the rod, he will not die." And Proverbs 29:17, "Discipline your son and he will give you peace. He will bring delight to your soul." Now, discipline is not beating. Discipline is training, guiding, rearing, bringing someone up. Yes, there are times where we need to inflict punishment, but that's a whole other teaching, but there's ways of doing it. This is not beating children and disciplining in that way. But as a leader, if I am an employer, you know, or a supervisor, I have the responsibility of disciplining those in my care. If someone doesn't comply with the guidelines or the rules of the workplace, then there are times where you've got to bring that person in and you've got to discipline, confront the wrong behavior, and instruct them in what they should do. This is discharging, in that loose sense of the word, the prophet role. You're representing God's heart to those in your care. The next responsibility that you have is the responsibility of being the priest to those in your care. Now, I like to think of this, it's easiest for me to see this with regards to a family. As the head of my family, I have the priestly responsibility to present offerings on behalf of my family to God. That's the priest role. The priest is one who would intercede and go before God on behalf of the people. So this responsibility, I'm to make sure that my family and its offerings of praise and worship are properly brought before God in thanksgiving. Let's go to Genesis chapter 8, verse 18. You see that Noah clearly displayed this responsibility. In verse 18, it says, "So Noah came out together with his sons and his wife and his sons' wives, all the animals, all the creatures that move along the ground, and all the birds. Everything that moves on the earth came out of the ark, one kind after another. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord, and taking some of the clean animals and clean birds, he sacrificed burnt offerings on it." The very first thing Noah did coming out of that ark was he discharged his priestly responsibility on behalf of his family, the only people alive at that time, you know, but that's him discharging that priestly responsibility. As the prophetic responsibility, you're representing God's heart to those in your care. As the priest's responsibility, you're representing those in your care, their hearts back to God. And you're making sure that they're bringing their offerings of praise and worship to God. Eli, in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 11 and 12, is an example of what we are not to do. In verse 11, it says, "Then Elkanah went home to Ramah, but the boy ministered before the Lord under Eli the priest." Verse 12, "Eli's sons were wicked men. They had no regard for the Lord." I mean, here's Eli. He knows this, and yet he's doing nothing about it. And it goes on in 1 Samuel chapter 2, in verse 17, it says, "The sin of these young men was very great in the Lord's sight, for they were treating the Lord's offering with contempt." Eli is not living up to his responsibility, first of all, for his family. Yes, he's you know, a priest in the tabernacle there, but he also has a responsibility to his family, and these are his sons, and he is allowing them to have contempt for the offerings of God. Verse 22, "Now Eli, who was very old, heard about everything his sons were doing to all Israel, how they slept with the women who served at the entrance to the tent of meeting. I mean, this is unbelievable to me. This guy, you know, this priest, you know, knows this and is allowing it to go on. So when we have a responsibility as to be the priest to our families or to be the priest for those in your charge and care, it means that we are to make sure that the offerings, the praise, the worship is properly brought before God. In Ezra chapter 10, verse 10, it says, "Then Ezra the priest stood up and said to them, 'You have been unfaithful. You have married foreign women, adding to Israel's guilt. Now make confession to the Lord, the God of your fathers, and do his will. Separate yourselves from the people around you and from your foreign wives.' The whole assembly responded with a loud voice, 'You are right. We must do as you say.'" See, Ezra bringing that priestly responsibility. We see that Ezra was a priest. And as a priest, what was it that he was doing? He was responsible to make sure that the offerings, the praise, and the worship were brought properly before God. And they weren't doing that. They were sinning, and he called them out on it. As a priest, we are an intercessor and a worshiper. We lead our families in prayer. We make sure they're scripturally grounded. You know, I've got these, as I said, these wonderful little grandkids that we're raising, and they are being grounded in the scriptures because we have the responsibility as prophet and priest to the family to make sure that they understand God's heart and that they also bring their hearts back to God. We lead them into speaking in tongues because that's perfect praise and worship of God. As fathers, we specifically need to take the authority for our families because of the responsibility that we've been given. Jesus is an example as a priest, and it says in Hebrews chapter 7, verse 25, he always lives to intercede for them. Such a high priest meets our needs, one who is holy, blameless, pure, set apart from sinners, exalted above the heavens. That's his priestly duties which are being articulated here, and that's what we as leaders of our families, mothers and fathers, that's what we need to be doing. We need to intercede for our families, and we need to make sure that we're properly bringing the offerings of our families to God. I'd like to step back and just take a look at the life of Jesus Christ, because I think that he perfectly demonstrates these four roles: the role of the provider, protector, prophet, and priest. As a provider, Jesus, speaking from the cross, his words are recorded in John 19:27, when he says, "Here is your mother." From that time on, this disciple took her into his home. Now here's Jesus hanging on the cross at the hour of his death. His time is almost up. He looks down at John the apostle, and he says to him, "Here is your mother." What he's saying to John is, "John, take care of my mother. I'm going to be gone. I can't provide for my mother." We believe that his father, Joseph, was dead by this time. You know, there's a number of references in Scripture that give us insight that Jesus was, as the oldest son, responsible for his mother. And here, one of his last acts is as a provider. He's providing for his mother, and he looks and he says, "Here is your mother." And then from that time on, the disciple knew what he meant. That's why he took her into his home. Jesus, as a provider, fed thousands. Remember, he as a provider, you need to take care of the physical needs of those in your charge. I believe Jesus also provided for the spiritual needs of his physical brothers. It says that prior to the day of Pentecost, or prior literally to his crucifixion and resurrection, that they didn't believe in him. But then after the resurrection, something happened. Let's go to John chapter 7, verse 5 and 6. It says, "For even his own brothers did not believe in him. Therefore Jesus told them, 'The right time for me has not yet come. For you, any time is right.'" He's speaking specifically. They're saying, "Hey, Jesus, why don't you go up to Jerusalem?" They're kind of being contemptuous of him. And it says they did this because they didn't believe in him. They didn't believe who he was. And he's saying, "Hey, it's not right for me. For you, anytime's right, but it's not right." But then let's go down in Acts chapter 1. Verse 14, it says, they all joined together constantly in prayer, along with the women and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and with his brothers. Wait a minute. In John 7, 5, and 6, it says clearly, for even his own brothers did not believe him. But now we get to Acts chapter 1, 14. This is just before, you know, the day of Pentecost. They're all joining together constantly. They're in prayer. And here's Mary, the mother of Jesus, and his brothers. What happened? We think there's evidence that suggests that he went ahead to Galilee and appeared to them, because clearly they believed now. In Acts 1, something happened. What was it? There's no way of proving it, but I could see that Jesus, as the provider, cared so much for his brothers that he ends up in Galilee and says, all right, boys, here I am. Now, when you look in Luke chapter 24, verse 39, when he shows up with the apostles, what does he do? He says, here I am, handle me, touch me. Literally, he says, handle me. But it's handle, and they're like, come on, guys, touch me, feel me. Why? He wants them to believe. He's providing for their hearts. You know, they saw him dead. They see him now. Here he is standing there, you know, certainly looks like Jesus, talks like Jesus. And we've had all these reports. And, you know, I mean, their inclination is to believe he's a ghost. And he says, handle me, touch me, see it's me. You know, well, something happened with his brothers and they believed too. And I believe it's because Jesus, as the provider, was making sure that they were, his mother was physically taken care of, all those in his charge were taken care of, and he had also was providing for the physical, or I mean the spiritual and emotional needs of his physical brothers. Jesus as a protector. Well, how did he show up as a protector? Well, in Luke chapter 22, verse 32, he turned to Peter and said, Satan's desired to sift you like wheat, but I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. Jesus is trying to protect Peter. How is he protecting him? Well, first he's warning him, and then he's also telling him, I've been praying for you, Peter. You know, he also turned in John 18, 9, it's recorded where he said in his prayer, he says, I have not lost one of those you gave me. He's a protector. He's taking care of the sheep that were within his charge. And then remember the woman that came and washed his feet and poured, broke the alabaster jar and broke the perfume over his feet. And then there's grumbling that's going on. It's recorded in Mark 16, 6 or John 12, 7. And there's, you know, Judas is probably sitting there saying, oh, what are you doing? We could have taken that perfume and sold it for money, because Judas had, you know, was being greedy and stealing from the money bag. What is Jesus' response? Leave her alone. Jesus is clearly discharging his responsibilities as a protector. He's obviously the prophet too. He always represented God's heart. He was a perfect representation of God. You know, he was constantly, as the prophet, saying, it is written. You remember he's saying, beware of the teachers of the law. You know, so Jesus, you know, there's no mistake of him discharging his responsibility as a prophet. Although he was a prophet, I'm using this term in the sense of representing God's heart to those in your care. And Jesus clearly did that all the time. And finally, as a priest. That's one who represents the people and brings their offering before God and encourages them to bring the offerings. And that's where it says in Hebrews 4:14, therefore, since we have a great high priest who has gone through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet was without sin. Jesus, as the priest, is always making intercession for us. He's always bringing our praise and our worship before God. That's why in Hebrews 7:25 it says, therefore, he is able to save completely those who come to God through him, because he always lives to intercede for them. Jesus clearly represents the provider, the protector, the prophet, and the priest. And as leaders, heads of our families, heads of business, responsibilities in the workplace, responsibilities in the church, we too all must rise up to these responsibilities as providers, protectors, prophets, and priests. How can you use this teaching? Well, just as I said, when my friend John Truett mentioned it to me years ago, I had to honestly sit back, look at my life, and look at how I had been living up to these responsibilities. Was I being a proper protector, provider, prophet, priest? You know, there are times where I can honestly say I wasn't. And there's been times where just having this clarity of teaching has helped me to know I need to step up my game in this area. I need to encourage my family more in prayer. I need to make sure, first of all, that I'm praying for my family, that I'm up early in the morning and last thing at night, that I'm praying a protection over my household. I also need to make sure that I'm calling everybody as the priest of the family for times of worship to God, thanking him for the things he's done. And as that prophetic responsibility, I need to make sure I'm properly representing God's heart. Not my will, but God's will, just as Jesus Christ was doing it. You know, we can delegate activities, but you can't delegate responsibilities. When I say delegate activities, I can ask someone else to do something that I'm responsible for, but I'm still responsible for it. If they don't do it right, then it still falls on my shoulders. You can delegate activities, but not responsibilities. And we have a responsibility before God to be providers, protectors, prophets, and priests.
The teaching you just heard was a presentation of Spirit and Truth Fellowship International. For further study, we encourage you to visit our research website, truthortradition.com. If you would like to get your copy of this teaching on CD or tape, you can go online at our home website, stfonline.org/store, or call us toll-free at 888-255-6189. Again, that's 888-255-6189. God bless you.